Miles of black ribbon on the lone highway. Men turn into boys on the lone highway. Rest up creeps and thrive on the lone highway. Pretty girls beware out on the lone highway. On the lone highway. Hello and welcome to Operation Scorpio. Today's date is Saturday, August 27, 2022. And welcome to the free-range open-air insane asylum we call Earth. Well, guys, here we are. Here we are watching the Jewish hellscape finally being revealed. Oh yes, guys, the Jewish hellscape is slowly but surely being revealed for all the world to see. The thin veneer of this multicultural wonderland known as Y-America 2022 is really falling apart, isn't it, guys? The gay disco facade is crumbling, and it is revealing the evil Jewish rot for all the world to see. And I believe that very, very soon, even the normiest of normies are not going to like what they see. Our world being plunged into chaos for no viable reason, no rational reason. And of course, the great trick is going to try to make us believe it was all inevitable. There's no other choice, no other option. We didn't see that one coming. It's nobody's fault. Don't blame anyone. Don't be a hater. You're going to hear that cry coming forward very soon, guys. That's increasingly going to become part of the narrative. That, along with, we all have to make sacrifices to save the planet. That's coming soon. And I guess that Jerome Powell character even mentioned, I guess just the other day, yesterday, that American households are going to feel pain to try to fight inflation. Oh, yes. So, yes, we all have to make sacrifices to save the planet. Start eating bugs. Oh, yeah. And I'm sure you guys have by now seen some of these clips of some of these Hollywood, you know, nut jobs, essentially, like Angelina Jolie and Nicole Kidman eating bugs, even eating, you know, mealworms, you know, just, I mean, really disgusting. Oh, the bugs are so good. Ooh, I love bugs. Something a little off about both of those women. They don't look exactly, well, fully human. Let's just say that. And now there's some clips circulating around the internet of actual, you know, schools teaching little kids to eat bugs. And even, you know, handing out little packets of crickets for them to eat in school. And so exactly why are we still sending our children to public school systems? Why are we doing that? And of course, what kind of creatures eat bugs? or make, you know, the majority of their diet on bugs, well, that would be reptiles, not higher species of mammals. There isn't any higher species of mammal that willingly sustains itself on bugs. Except for maybe an anteater, but that's not exactly a higher species of mammal. And if you think about it, guys, you know, not to be indelicate here, but there's no way to clean, you know, the waste products out of a bug before you consume it. It's in there. You know, the waste product is in there along with the bug. So if you're eating bugs, you're eating bug fecal matter as well. And that's not something I would call healthy. And I think, you know, this really goes to show how much these creatures or people really despise you and your children, you know, to try to make it normalized to be eating bugs. Certainly not healthy and humiliating. The hatred is really out there for all to see with a bug diet. And, you know, I'm sure many of you guys out there have deveined shrimp. You know, you got to get that vein out and get the little sack of waste out the back of the shrimp before you cook it up and eat it. I mean, it's not going to kill you if you eat it, but it's not healthy. And to make that part of your diet is truly sick. And in other news, switching topics here, going away from bug eating, I think we've covered that. True hatred is on full display here with this. But I'm sure you guys have all heard by now that Alexander Dugin's daughter was killed in a car bomb in Russia, sending her to a fiery grave. And of course, this is related to the conflict in Ukraine right now. But what I found particularly interesting as I monitored the enemy war transmissions known as the mainstream media was the complete lack of, you know, compassion or remorse as they reported on this story. You know, that a young woman's life had been snuffed out at the hands of essentially terrorists. A car bombing is an act of terrorism, but that word, of course, was not used. There's no remorse. And they almost, you know, implied that she somehow deserved it because, you know, her father was so evil and all, being a thought criminal and one of those awful nationalist types. Not a single bit of remorse or sorrow. But what's interesting, of course, you know, if she had been a homosexual or black or transgendered or any other apparatchik of the global homo empire, there would have been a trail of tears, and hours of bemoaning the great loss of an innocent young woman. I mean, imagine if Hillary Clinton's daughter met a similar fate, how that would be covered by our alleged media, the enemy war transmissions, because that's truly what they are, known as the mainstream media. There'd probably be even a call for a candlelight vigil. But alas, nothing of the sort ensued, did it? And it really, again, it sort of illustrates the false compassion that this tyrannical system or tyrannical agenda hides behind. You know, this facade of false compassion. And of course, when the right people are killed, it evaporates immediately. Very revealing. The false compassion is reserved for the useful idiots that serve the agenda. And keep it moving along. And make no mistake, anyone else is considered cannon fodder. And again, this kind of goes back to, hey, eat bugs, slave. Oh, your daughter got blown up by a car bomb? Oh, well. Next. And you know, these are some unpleasant truths that we're going to have to confront if we plan on surviving this. And, you know, last night we talked a lot about unpleasant truths with Io Kimathi on Giuseppe's The Perfect Triangle. A very high level discussion amongst people that, well, came from very different backgrounds and have very different worldviews, yet have come to some of the same exact conclusions. So make sure to go on the archives on Speak Free Radio and check it out. It's worth your time to listen to. And of course, you know, the murder of Dugin's daughter was certainly related to Ukraine. That's no mystery there. Of course, that wasn't mentioned either. And of course, the car bomb was almost certainly meant for Dugin himself, not his daughter. And of course, the enemy war transmissions known as the mainstream media are calling Dugin Putin's brain or Putin's Rasputin. Rasputin. That's interesting. And what's amazing to me is how the West, the collective West, Triple Echo, has done all it can to prop up this regime in Kiev. Isn't it interesting, too, how the mainstream media all switched over to calling it Kiev, the Ukrainian pronunciation, instead of the Russian pronunciation of Kiev. But, you know, all in lockstep, all at the same time, right? No cause for alarm there. That's not an indication that they're all reading from a central script or anything like that. Don't become a conspiracy theorist and start thinking that way. But they're admitting, you know, publicly that Ukraine has been given a total of $54 billion thus far in, what, 6 months? And I always like to look at a billion as 1,000 million. So that's $54,000 million. It helps you visualize it better. $54,000 million given, you know, away by the U.S. and their magic shekel printing apparatus to Ukraine. And apparently just the other day, Groper Joe is giving away another $3 billion. Another $3 billion. But, you know, it's interesting, too, that the Pentagon has admitted that they've been quietly giving more systems, more goodies, kind of under the table, including some pretty high-tech anti-radar systems. So quite a few people are estimating that the real total is at least $84 billion, maybe $100 billion, possibly, in just 6 months. And it just shows you when something is part of the agenda, the budget is limitless. This notion that, oh, we have to cut back, we don't have enough money for that, sorry about that. That's such obvious, you know, misdirection. Because when it's an agenda item, sky's the limit, baby. And, you know, this amount of money given already is greater than the entire Russian military budget for an entire year. So I think we should take what's going on there very seriously, and make no mistake, this could very easily spill into a much greater conflict. I really do see that as one of the contingency plans if other things don't work out, expanding this war, because it would serve many purposes in furthering the agenda. It would really put a logjam in the supply chain. And, you know, I'm not entirely clear on, you know, my position on Putin, because so many things he's doing is just fitting right into the agenda. And it'll be interesting to see what happens this winter with a cold European winter and no Russian oil or gas, or very little, to build some more windmills. Yeah, that's the answer. More windmills, guys. And of course, you know, there's an attack on Crimea. You know, they've been shelling the bridge there that connects the island with the rest of the country. And technically, that's Russian territory now. So sending missiles or sabotage units into Crimea is intended to escalate things. And very quietly, Groper Joe has committed to helping Ukraine for the next 6 years. That's not gotten a lot of press, but Groper Joe has committed to 6 years of aid. Another indication, including military aid, this is another indication that this could end up being a greatly expanded conflict. So I think, you know, one of the reasons why the Russians are playing this so slowly, because it just seems like they're not really, you know, going for it as if they really wanted to have a quick victory. I think they could have used a very different strategy. It seems like the strategy is to drag this on both sides. So things may be very different in Europe this winter. We'll have to see. It could really put a lot of pressure on things if people have trouble heating their homes, or at least, you know, able to afford heating their homes. And of course, the other great drama ongoing right now is this completely scripted event of the raid on Mar-a-Lago. And what, you know, I find interesting is that there's no doubt in my mind that Trump is a made man. He's a made man, guys. He is on board. And because of that fact, he's playing a role in this great distraction. And the idea that, you know, President Trump's going to be charged and arrested, if it happens, which I really doubt, if it happens, it's going to be a complete show. A show trial, and the redemption of the hero for the people that follow him and believe in him. And it's a great distraction away from the absolutely crumbling narrative of the great savior of the vaccine that is imploding everywhere around the world. Not getting a lot of press, even though it has made its way into the edges of the mainstream media. But the narrative that this is some wonderful elixir of life designed to save you and keep you safe from COVID has been eviscerated. They're losing their numbers very quickly on that one. So we've got to have another show to keep people from thinking about that. So people don't think about the soaring inflation rate right now, which is easily 25%. Easily. Probably 50% for a lot of things. Rents have just gone off the chart for people that have to rent an apartment. In San Diego and Los Angeles, a one-bedroom apartment, you know, just a decent, in a decent neighborhood, you're looking at about $2,000. That's more than a mortgage payment. So the wheels are coming off the wagon here on this economy and the reality that we're supposed to believe in. This idea that we have a free market economy, none of it's being manipulated. It's all coming apart. And we're supposed to watch the show, the great show of the savior, Donald Trump, or the bad guy, depending on which side of the aisle you're sitting on, as he goes through his trials and tribulations for mishandling documents. Who cares? They're top secret documents, guys. It's national security. It's so funny hearing the lefties moan about national security when not long ago they were the ones who didn't trust any of that stuff. It shows you how malleable the whole paradigm is with left and right. It's all very malleable, isn't it? And controlled from a central source. So stay tuned. I think we're on the precipice of something very big, very, very soon. My guess is 2023 is going to start with a bang, either literally or figuratively. Time will tell. And that said, I would like to bring on my main man, my co-host, and my partner in crime, Mr. Giuseppe, formerly from the District of Criminals. Giuseppe, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, and maybe we should, we got two of our roundtable guys here already. Maybe we should bring them on too, so might as well start the loving hate.
Well, let me get your take on things first, Giuseppe.
Oh, okay, sorry, okay.
Yeah, let me just get, I wanted to get a little input from you, then let's do that. That sounds good.
Okay, fire, excellent intro. Everything you said, I completely agree with. The globalist parasite, the international Jew, is desperate now. And I don't know if you heard on Dennis Fetcho Hour 2, he interviewed the courageous Alfred Schaefer, and Alfred is not backing down at all. I mean, he's like, holla hoax, and the, you know, so... You know, what a pair of balls on that guy. I mean, he should be leading the Germans. Hopefully he will. I mean, he made it seem like more and more Germans are waking up. And if ever there was an opportunity for Germany to rise, and like Dennis Fetcho said, Germany and Russia should work together and, you know, essentially eliminate the international Jew from any vestiges of power in this world, what a better world we would have.
Yes. Yes, that was on Fetcho's show today?
Yep, hour two. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, those two have been making the rounds. We got to get them on one of our shows together.
Oh yeah, for sure. I'll reach out to Monica and see if I can set that up in the next few weeks.
Okay, well, I guess you're right. Let's go ahead and bring on the two people we have here already. We have Malefica Scott and Blackbird Nine. And I guess we're going to really kick off the roundtable next hour. But let me just welcome both you gentlemen, Blackbird and Scott. How you guys doing, and what's on your mind today?
Greetings, good sirs. Great to be back with you once again. Happy Saturday.
Woohoo!
All right. And Scott, how are you, sir?
Greetings, fellow Humes. How are you doing?
Hey, let me try real quick and see if you guys can hear this clip out of our new system, Clean Feed. So let me know if you guys hear this. Did you guys hear that at all?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, good, good. Then you should be able to hear everything. Okay, fantastic. Good, good, good.
Yeah, it's nice to be back with you guys again. With my fellow Humes, as everyone's pronoun should be nowadays, you know. And interesting points you made at the beginning there, Scorpio. Particularly the fact that Russia, hardly a blitzkrieg, is it?
That's very well said. That's been one of the questions I've had from the beginning. Is this is not? It's kind of like they're just going along as slowly as possible, and there's a lot of damage done to buildings. And I understand, you know, even Amnesty International has said that the Ukrainians are using apartment buildings and hospitals for military staging, which technically is a war crime, whatever that's supposed to be. But it's interesting how slow this is going. It almost seems like they want this to drag on. What's your take on that? Let me get that from you, and then we'll go to Blackbird and then Giuseppe.
Well, I'm just amazed that both sides aren't using Scud missiles. It's going that slowly. I mean, it really has dragged on and on. You know, where's all this amazing new tech that the world is supposed to have been coming up with over the, you know, since the Cold War? You know, we're supposed to have all this amazing new tech that wars should last a fraction of the time because of, what was it Bill Hicks said something about, let's pull up G-13, destroys everything but the fillings in their teeth, helps us pay for the war effort. You know, where is all this kit? We seem to be the most amazing thing that I've seen throughout this entire thing is drone footage of them dropping like what could potentially just be water bombs on people, but obviously they're not, they're grenades or whatever. But, and when I say drone footage, we're not talking like a Global Hawk drone. We're talking like the sort of drone that you would, spend a bit of high-end money on to go and, take some nice scenery of your local sort of coastline or something. You know, it's hardly high-tech kit being rolled out here. So the whole let's put it this way, I'll go back to my first phrase, and that is it's hardly a blitzkrieg.
That's exactly right. And the other interesting thing about this, at the very beginning, Russia brought out its absolute worst equipment, its worst probably soldiers, and just said, hey, let's just get rid of this junk and let them blow it up and kill our worst soldiers. And then they've been kind of going up to some better equipment, but it's still, as you said, hardly a blitzkrieg. And they still, it seems to me, they're still using a lot of older equipment on the field. So it's just a little strange. Something's been a little off about this conflict since the beginning for me. And I have a lot of unanswered questions about it. Blackbird, why don't you jump in? What's your take on this?
Great opening, by the way. I was sitting here just totally into it, all relaxed. All of a sudden, it's like, hey, we're going to bring everybody in. And I'm like, whoa. Spilling my juice, trying to get the microphone uncovered. It's like, oh, I thought we were just going on at the top of the next hour. But great open. I was completely into what you were saying. It was good stuff. One of the things, about my particular, vantage point on this was, being backstage of 9/11 and working not only with the telecommunication industries, but also the militaries and the governments and the intelligence agencies and all of this. And since I had my own company, you know, I was subcontracting in. So I was playing the same subcontractor game with the military as people like, you know, Raytheon and Rand and Booz Allen Hamilton, echo, you know. And so you just see this different aspect of military and preparedness and warfare as, you know, this is just an industry, right? And so the whole thing about, you know, you were talking about the, you know, dated materials they're using in Ukraine was, I'm just thinking of this, you know, inventory manager saying, well, this stuff's about end of, you know, shelf life, you know, so we're going to have to dispose of it, and it'll be cheaper to have a little war somewhere and use it up than have to dispose of it to EPA standards or whatever, you know, because it's, like you said, it's like this has been the most bizarre war, you know, for a superpower like Russia and, you know, basically a breakaway province of Ukraine, but it's supposed to be Khazaria 2.0. So, you know, why drag this out so much? Just go in and get you, you got your objectives, get in, get out, and it's done, right? No. And then, you know, the part that has always seemed off, I think, you know, it really kind of jumped the shark with the good Nazis. I couldn't quite, as a, you know, suffering from irrational anti-Semitism like I do, you know, the idea of good Nazis just kind of lost me on the whole Ukraine thing. And the other thing was Kiev. I like Kiev. I don't like Kiev. So, but that's, you know, my little religion there. So back to you.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing as I was doing the intro, you know, I was really kind of thinking about something that you've said many times, which is they want you dead. They want your children dead. And, you know, that's why they want you eating bugs and, you know, sacrificing to save the world. Sacrificing your way of life, sacrificing, well, maybe you can't heat your home this winter. It's just, it's too much of a carbon footprint. So yeah, I just, those words kind of rang in my mind as I was doing that. And, you know, I've wondered why in the beginning, if what's the goal here, is it to liberate the Eastern provinces, or if they wanted to topple the regime, why didn't they just send some special forces in and arrest all the top people in this regime? They could have done it. You know that they have, you know, the Russian spy could fit in very easily in anywhere in Ukraine. I'm sure they're everywhere. I'm sure they have the addresses and the names and the habits of all these people who are at the top of the regime. I've wondered why they, if the goal is to do a regime change, which has to be part of this, why would you leave Zelensky in power as they try to bring Ukraine into NATO and into the European Union and join the Kalergi plan? They could have easily done that. I just wondered why that wasn't part of the plan. Instead, they brought all those tanks in and they stopped. And I don't know, that was strange how they had that big row of tanks just sitting there on this road for weeks at a time. It just didn't really make much sense to me.
Is that back to me?
Yeah. If you want to just...
Yeah, well, you know, I think, you know, if we can kill with all this modern technology of pinpoint assassinations and kill the Al-Qaeda number two at least four times, right? You know, Al-Zahari, how many times had we killed him with these strategic strikes? But those zombie Al-Qaeda guys, they just won't stay down like Osama bin Laden, but... Yeah, I mean, if this was a real military campaign, given what we now have, you know, as far as technology, you know, isolating somebody, tracking every move you make, and being able to, in the own culture, you know, where you're culturally similar, you know, so you can just walk among the population as an, you know, hostile agent and carry out all types of mischief, take out, you know, all your key people. And it's like, how many people would you have to take out to completely decapitate, you know, a small state like Ukraine, right? You know, so if you were really playing for realsies, you know, like the end game is to, you know, achieve all these end game objectives and actually do it with the least amount of, you know, strain on your population, right? you know, it would have been done. But instead, we're getting yet another perpetual war. It just reminds me of George Orwell. You know, the war is not supposed to end. The war is just supposed to perpetuate. I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, it's that idea of perpetual war that Trotsky was always on about. So anyway, back to you.
Yeah, good points. Giuseppe, what's your take on this? Let's get your unique perspective.
Well, I believe I have a unique, loving form of hate. And my take is, I think you guys are right. The only possible reason Putin is being so cautious and reasoned in his maneuvers is he doesn't want to create an easy option to get nuked and start World War III. I mean, I think that if you want to break it down in a percentage, it's probably more like 85% he's part of it, and maybe 15% he is fighting the Rothschild global cabal and doesn't want to make it easy to start World War III, but probably more likely what you guys are saying.
Yeah, it's interesting. Of course, the Russians have made several statements that nuclear weapons are on the table.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of some of the things they've said are pretty shocking. But, of course, they've been pushed and goaded.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, sir.
That New York PSA of the nuclear strikes, and suddenly we're getting, you know, these awareness drills from public safety in New York about what to do in case of a nuclear attack. It's like, okay, where did that come from? Yeah, so just sorry.
Perfectly normal.
That is,
make sure to put plastic over your windows and use duct tape and hide under your bed until you receive notice from the authorities. Well, Giuseppe, what do you think the goal is here with this Ukraine thing? Because it's never been clear to me. What's the goal?
Well, the goal by the international Jew and the dual citizen traitors that run this government is to, they have been trying to, since 2014 when they overthrew the duly elected government of Ukraine and installed the puppet faggot Zelensky. How funny that he took the pictures in Vanity Fair magazine with his beard wife. I mean, that dude is as queer as a $3 bill. And so, you know, the Jew Noodleman, the dual citizen traitor operating in our government illegally and immorally, went there in 2014 under the Obama regime and overthrew that government, much the way the color revolution hit the United States in 2020 with the installation of the living glory hole and the Zionist puppet Joe Biden as the phony president that he is. But I think that the Jew has been trying for years now to drag Russia into a hot war. And so I think that's why Putin is measured. I mean, I think if you combined Russia and China, they could defeat the United States pretty easily. I mean, you know, we've got generals in skirts and heavy makeup and trannies and homos at every level of the once somewhat respectable United States military, which is now a joke. And so, but on the other hand, the Jew may be psychopathic in his evil genius, but the Jew is also an incredible coward. And so I don't think they want a nuclear war. I think they, and that's why Putin threatened to use the weapons, because they're all about deception and psychological operations, high level mind rapery of the goyim cattle and the world. So I think they are trying to get what they want, which is control of Russia without a nuclear war.
Interesting. Yeah. You know, it's interesting you brought up the photo shoot for Vogue magazine. It's interesting, you know, like,
oh, Vogue.
If your country's in this existential, you know, war for the very survival of your country, well, it makes total sense that you do a photo shoot with Vogue magazine, doesn't it? I mean, that fits together really well. And then, of course, at the same time, while Ukraine fights for its existence, supposedly, the Zelensky character is trying to push gay rights and gay marriage. And
right.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't, you know, it just shows you how these agenda items move forward, yeah, even though there's this big war. And if, what's interesting is that he can't actually get gay marriage without them altering the Constitution, because apparently the Ukrainian Constitution says marriage is between a man and a woman. And now at the same time, I'm just reading that Poland is now pushing LGBTQ stuff. Like that's a big, like they're really pushing that forward in Poland right now. So it makes you wonder how real this war really is, how much of it's controlled, and how much of it is just being used to, well, let's destroy a whole bunch of buildings in parts of the country so we can rebuild it in a new vision. I don't know. It's a complex question and a lot of moving parts there. Scott, what do you think? Why don't you jump in, man?
Well, I mean, it's not just Poland that's declaring their love for gay rights as well now. I've got an article here, which I was going to bring up for the Limeys on Monday, but Vietnam declares being gay or trans is not an illness and cannot be cured or converted in a landmark win for local equal rights activists. So, you know, this is, again, like you say, the agenda rolls on worldwide, regardless of what's going on. As far as Putin goes and his role in all this, I was talking to Giuseppe last week sometime, and we had a good old sort of chat about this. And, you know, for me, one of the big things is that, you know, the similarities between the machinations which built up towards World War II. You know, the Polish guarantee is no different to us guaranteeing that we'll help out Ukraine, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's the jury's out for me with Putin, purely because whatever he's doing, he is playing right into the hands of the Build Back Better, wipe out Western civilization. I mean, we're looking at now either paying to heat our homes in the UK or paying for the war in Ukraine. And guess which we've chosen? I mean, it's just ridiculous. And obviously the public aren't making these choices. But the fact of the matter is, the big tell for me will be if Putin manages to bite the hook of let's make this a global hot war, then he's fallen for it. I mean, I'm not being funny. The guy must know his history. He can't be all stupid. So he must know his history. So can he not see the same patterns that we see time and time again over all these blooming nonsense wars? All wars are bankers' wars. Yeah, and they generally fund both sides. As Grandad said in his book, why is it that banks lavishly furbish governments with money for all these wars, and as soon as you mention peace, credit is immediately restricted? So I am of the mindset that Putin is part of the problem. But there is a little part of me that thinks, you know, I mean, as with Hitler, Hitler was goaded into the situation that he found himself in. But to be fair, he still bit the bloody hook, didn't he? So, the jury's out for me. I couldn't tell you, being honest. But I think the tell will be if Putin allows this to go global, the same with Hitler in many respects, that, you know, Hitler allowed the war to go global. Did he not realize that all wars are bankers' wars and that all banks of the world or all financiers of the world were going to be up in arms against him? And it was going to be, you know, it was going to be a war of attrition no matter what happened. And then lo and behold, we have, you know, Operation Overlord and opening of the Third Front. And, you know, it was game over for Germany in that respect. And, you know, as I say, the tell will be if Putin allows this to go to a hot Third World War, then he's showing his true colors, as far as I'm concerned, because he can't be that flipping dumb, seriously, which is maybe why he's dragging his knuckles. It's a valid point. So,
yeah, that's a really good point, Scott. And You know, it's funny how they always show the Zelensky character in, you know, one of these kind of army green t-shirts. He never wears anything else. It's always an army green t-shirt now, as though he's the commander. He's the military commander. He has no background in the military. He doesn't know anything about the military. Yet we're supposed to think this guy's running the show of this great war. It, of course, he's an actor, literally and figuratively.
Funny you say that, but then Hitler at the same time said that he was not going to take off his military uniform until the war was over, and didn't. So there we go. We have another one of these little plays playing out here. And, you know, I know it'll anger people that no matter what I say about Hitler, I'm going to anger somebody, because you've got the pros and the people that are pro and the people that are against. And, you know, I honestly think that if Germany had been allowed to continue the way it was going, they would have paved the way. But this is no different to making America great again, isn't it? You know, let's just dangle the carrot in front of people and play on their nationalist tendencies in order to get the job done that we want. And then we can always pull the rug out from under their feet at a later date. You know, and what did Biden do when he first got into office? Just started signing off things that pull the rug out from under people's feet. So, you know, yeah, it's just same old storybook. Repeat, repeat, repeat.
Great point, Scott. And I really like what you said about, you know, when there's war, there's always plenty of money. You know, no cost is no issue. Just keep fighting. You and them fight. And then as soon as peace breaks out, peace broke out. Oh, we got to restrict the credit. We got to start paying the bills here, guys. Time to come back to reality. That's a very good point, and it shows you the malleability of our reality here. You know, like we're supposed to believe all this, and great stuff coming in the chat room on Twitch right now. Some really funny stuff. Another thing too is let me get everyone's take on this. It's a very valid question. How much in the know is Putin, for example? I mean, I don't think they take all these guys and say, okay, you're joining the Illuminati, and here's the secret history of humanity, and here's our plan to take over the world, and here's your role. I don't think it works that way. Maybe I'm sure some people are brought in at that level, but everything's on a need-to-know basis. So most of the people playing the game are only fed exactly what they need to know to play their role, and no more. That's how they keep these secrets. You know, I'm sure Blackbird can confirm this. So where do you think his knowledge sphere is? Like, that's my question, because, you know, he's obviously a highly intelligent man. He knows what he's doing. He's one of the, you know, top statesmen on the world stage, no question. But where does he fit into the hierarchy, and how much does he know about what's really going on? That's, I guess, one of the big unanswered questions. And let's get Blackbird and then Giuseppe and then come back to Scott. Go ahead, Blackbird.
Oh, real quick, you know, because I think we're getting ready to come up on the break. But, Putin to me is, you know, still that wild card. Is he a white hat? Is he a red hat? Is he a black hat? You know, what is his motive? But like, I loved what Giuseppe was saying is, you know, this all goes back to basically the post-Soviet reconstruction, where suddenly, you know, the Soviet Union has fallen and now they're building up Russia again. And you got this guy, Putin, who used to be intelligence, you know, guy, very, you know, brilliant man, you know, warrior. He's, you know, got high belts in judo and things like that, award winning. And, you know, he's faced with basically the Minsk agreements that, okay, this is how it's going to be in this post-Soviet, you know, Russia. And suddenly George Soros and Klaus Schwab and the rest of the Globo Homo people come in and do a color revolution, overthrow everything and say, no, we're not going to agree to the Minsk agreements. And suddenly you've got all this American presence via people like Hillary Clinton and Obama and, you know, that crowd. And then you have the accusations of all of the Pentagon-linked bioweapons labs in Ukraine that Putin is supposedly neutralizing. So it's like this razor's edge of trying to enforce the Minsk agreements against the will of Soros and Schwab without setting off a full-blown World War III, which would basically, you know, reduce all the old superpowers of Europe and Amalek to dust and leave Greater Israel, you know, as the sole superpower like they always want. And before it going back, thank you so much, Mr. Scott, for the Hidden Government book. This has been wonderful. If I'd seen that before 9/11, everything would make a lot more sense to me. I spent two decades learning what I could have learned in, what, you know, 200 pages in this book. You know, it was like, you know, it's amazing how, you know, good the data dots in that book were. So thank you so much for that.
You're very welcome, sir. It's my privilege and pleasure.
Well, it looks like we've been joined by Dave Gaheri as well. Dave, how are you, sir?
I'm doing okay. Just got off the road for a week, so takes a little bit of acclimating to that, but I'm doing great, man. Hope you guys are doing well. Great to see all of you.
Great. Where were you on the road to?
Well, a couple of stops. Went to a wake. One of my uncles passed in the beautiful communist state of New Jersey, or Joysey, or just Jersey, or Jew Jersey, whatever you want to call it. Went there, paid my respects, and went there with my oxygen, of course. And they were, you know, the family was very happy that I made it there. They were shocked. You know, it's like a 1,200 mile trip, and I can't fly because they don't allow oxygen on planes, which I guess makes sense. Although someone was telling me, you know, when I was hospitalized, that whole idea about oxygen exploding is just a myth. I don't know. But at any rate, went from there to Ohio, where I hung out with a guy for a couple of days who I have been working with on a project regarding the USS Liberty, opening up either a children's hospital in Palestine, where he has a lot of land, or some sort of memorial to the Liberty and the boys who died that day, over 55 years ago. I hear the music.
Okay, welcome back to hour number two of Operation Scorpio. And we're sort of continuing our roundtable with Malefica Scott, Blackbird 9, Dave Gaheri, Giuseppe, formerly from the District of Criminals, and myself. And I want to let Giuseppe kick off where he wants this conversation to go at the top of the hour here. But before that, I want to get Dave's take, you know, on Putin and this war in Ukraine. Dave, you know, before you came into the show, we were kind of talking about some of the anomalies of the war in Ukraine and how it's really, for whatever reason, being played out very slowly. And Scott made the great point that it's hardly a blitzkrieg, which is funny and accurate. And then we sort of went into the question of Putin. What is his role? Is he truly someone that's working against this cabal? Or is he part of it? Or is he partly part of it, partly controlled, but rebelling against it? A lot of unanswered questions there. What's your take on these things, Dave? You're muted.
I wanted to make Giuseppe feel at home. So I purposely did that, pretending I didn't know I was muted. I said early on, I'm rooting for Putin, and I think he's just wearing them out. And we all know that there's a reason why he did that. And the reason is because the Jews had used and are using Ukraine as some sort of a launching point to take him and Russia down, you know, like stabbing into the heart of that country. NATO aggression, obviously. So I think that, you know, at least I don't see anyone else with a big military taking on the Jew world order. I'm all behind him. You'll hear people say that, wow, I can't believe that a lot of Americans are supporting a communist country against their own country without realizing, you know, why. You know, why are people getting behind a Soviet strongman? And, you know, there's a reason why, just like there's a reason why January 6th happened. People are pissed off. They're disgusted. And, of course, the Jews media would never recognize that. They would never give that any play. There's, I can't believe it. Why are they doing this? You know, so I hope that it progresses more favorably toward Russia and Putin. As my wife corrected me a couple of times, a lot of people say Putin. You know, it's Putin, Putin. So I hope that Putin continues to wear that part of the Jew world order down and has his way with them and ejects them and lets the West know that no matter how many arms they give to Ukraine, no matter how much support they give, that there is a limitation as to what they could do. And I think that you might see this dragging on for a little while longer when they just realize they're not going to be able to do anything and they get rid of that Jew comedian who I saw months ago playing the piano with his penis. This is the kind of garbage that we have here in the world who are supposedly the leaders. So I'm looking forward to that filth being taken out and some more evidence that it's not just the corrupt Jew-infested West that is going to have their way with any countries they want, that there's a new country around that isn't going to stand for it. And that aligns with a lot of the things that I think all of us do.
Yeah, you know, it's Putin's an interesting case because he has done a lot of things to revive traditionalism. He really helped revive the Orthodox, Russian Orthodox Church to a tremendous degree, which has, I think, had a huge influence on Russian civilization. But why do you think he's playing the war out so slowly? I mean, surely they could have gone there quickly and used a different strategy and mopped things up quickly. Why do you think they're playing it out slow?
Yeah, I'm not, of course, entirely sure why that might be. But I think that, you know, he's a chess player. So I think that that might be part of it. That it, at least in my experience, I've found that the best way to approach pretty much everything is not to rush into it and not to do anything hasty. The only time that philosophy has backfired is when someone dies. So where I might say, you know what, I'm going to put off seeing this guy or this girl until this time, and they pass on before I could do that. Otherwise, I've found that procrastinating has much greater benefits than the opposite. So I think that by him going in there and letting them know that he's there, he's not in any rush to come in and do a quick strike and head out. he's there. He might be there for a year. He might be there for 5 years. You know, similar to that old joke about, you know, the two bulls and, you know, they're up on the top of a hill and they're looking at all of these female cows. And, you know, there's an older bull, a wise bull, and a younger bull. And the younger bull says, you know, hey, let's go down there and, you know, screw them all. No, he said, let's go down there and screw one. And the old bull says, no, let's walk down there and screw them all. So I think that, you know, he's using some psychology. And the Russians are great at that, obviously. I mean, we're new kids on the block, right? I mean, we're just an extension of militaristic Great Britain. So, I mean, what does Great Britain do? You know, the same thing we do. You know, we go in and murder millions of innocent people, and we don't think about it. And then we raise a flag, and we're supposed to hold our hand to our heart and sing, you know, hallelujah, whatever it is. So the Russians are a smart bunch of people, and I think that's why he's taking his time, because he can, and he's letting them know, F you, we're doing it the way that we want to do it.
Yeah, great points, Dave. And I think another possible answer to this question is that he wants to let things go on until winter, because it'll be interesting to see what happens when suddenly Europe doesn't have any Russian oil or gas to heat their homes. And that might put a very different spin on reality in the clown world metaverse as, you know, that kind of reality hits home. So we'll see. It's a complex question, and those are really good points. Giuseppe, why don't you take over the helm? Where do you want to take things, sir? Why don't you go ahead?
Well, I'd like to make one final comment of hour one, where one of you gentlemen observed that the little faggot Zelensky's constantly wearing a green military T-shirt like he's the leader, but that cowardly faggot hightailed it to Poland on like day two and is broadcasting in front of a green screen to make it seem like he's in Ukraine when he's not even there. And he's making a lot of trips to Tel Aviv, and he's making secret trips to the United States that nobody knows about. So this is, he is just the front puppet, the front Jew puppet for this international Jew provocation of Russia, no doubt about it in my mind. But anyone's welcome to continue that. But I was thinking, you know, the last two shows. By the way, Dave, hats off for you and Paul English creating Speak Free Radio. I mean, it's starting to really pick up. And Thursday, we did a phenomenal first show, first of many, with Reed Sainsbury, author who wrote this book, Exposing the Lies of History. There we go. And then go to MoneyTreePublishing.com and buy that. And then yesterday we had Ayo Kemate, Jews of the Problem, which is going to be with Money Tree pretty soon, but you can buy that at Jews of the Problem. And what's remarkable is you have this white fella who grew up on a farm in Washington, now lives in Alabama, sees exactly what's going on, and this black fella who was a black nationalist, really a real man trying to champion his people, and they both, good old American fellows on you know, two different races, they both have come to the indisputable conclusion that Jews are the problem. And so I'd like to start with Blackbird 9, then Maleficus, and Dave Gahari. And is this our way out, that, you know, we're bringing Io back regularly? We're going to go through his book section by section like we're doing with Maleficus's brilliant grandfather, J. Craig Scott's tome, Hidden Government, like we're going to start doing with Reed's book, and we're doing Io's book. If we can get enough people to think about what's really going on, to buy these books, and read the many other books who are telling the real history of the last couple centuries, not the Jew. Every month is a 7 month July. And so let's start with Blackbird. Is this, can we somehow pull this fat out of the fire if the blacks and whites in America start working together?
Oh, definitely. You know, one of the things that I've always stressed is, you know, once everyone wakes up to the reality of what's going on, then finding the solutions is going to go fairly quickly. But with these, you know, trauma-based programming sleeping spells that everyone's under, you know, you're dealing with the cognitive dissonance, you know, battlefield, and we are doing such a great job. I mean, things like Speak Free Radio are just at the vanguard of breaking through those cognitive dissonance barriers. And I think one of the most important things we do is put in all the missing data dots that our adversary loves to use lying by omission about. You know, that's one of the most powerful lies, is lying by omission. Just don't tell them this part of the story. And just tip of the hat to Mr. Reed Sansbury for this, you know, exposing the lies of history, just like Mr. Scott's grandfather's book. You know, this is just rock solid data dots that, you know, once you have a better data set, then suddenly all that garbage in, garbage out programming that we were, you know, misprogrammed with starts breaking down, and you get a different worldview of that. Oh my gosh, maybe there's a reason why this same, you know, little cult has gotten treated this way all this time. It's for what they do. Yeah, this is just their, you know, MO. These are their end games. These are their objectives. And, you know, for those who don't know my work, you know, I was one of those early on 9/11 truthers. And, you know, I never had a problem with the chicken swingers. But like they said, 9/11 changed everything. And I had to go in and do the most hard part of unlearning all those things I had learned. And so when you have, you know, books like this, and, you know, I think of Mike King's, you know, books, just phenomenal, of just putting in all those missing data dots to paint a much better view of the world. And, you know, once, you know, we can, you know, get those data dots, we can pass them on to other people's, and everybody's receptive to this now. I think that's the big thing, is unlike right after 9/11, where people did not want to hear about the physics and thermodynamics of and impossible cell phone calls, because, you know, that we were at war, we were being attacked. You know, CNN told us so, right? And so now people, I think, especially with post-COVID, people are, you know, that was the big wake-up, that these people want you dead, and you need to get your head in the game. So back to you.
Maleficus, your thoughts on what I asked is if the American whites and blacks start working together and eliminate the power of the satanic parasite Jew, would that lead perhaps European countries to do the same thing?
Absolutely. I mean, it's always been a numbers game. And the thing is, it's numbers on knowledge, and it's the number of people that have actually got the knowledge and those that actually are willing to act upon it. That's really the biggie. I mean, this is what we're doing here, what Speak Free Radio does, what all these other radio networks does, and what all these fantastic authors are doing, is actually helping pool knowledge. In order that we've got, between us and our ancestors, we have a vast wealth. We have a library before us of all the knowledge. It's all there. It's the apathy of the people that they're too busy. You know, they're watching, they're playing their Xbox, or they're carrying their own. As I always say, they're carrying their own. You know, they're carrying Big Brother around in their back pocket, and wondering why they don't feel free, and wondering why they don't have any. You know, everything is controlled down certain avenues. So, you know, all these people that live their life through their mobile phone, and there are millions of them, just in the UK alone. Probably the greater percentage of the population of the UK, their entire life is not what's around them, like not their local community. It's here. It's on this stupid little thing in front of them. So yes, if everyone actually takes the information on board, and I have to say, I listened to the interview you guys did with Reed. That was phenomenal. I'm really chuffed that you're going to be going over that book. And I'm amazed, actually, that you didn't have your Twitch stream shut down again last night, because you were covering some pretty hot ground. But, you know, this is all down to, like, it's obvious for all of us that have actually done the research. It's obvious how much these idiots that consider themselves at the top of the food chain, it's obvious how much they hate us and despise us and just couldn't give a damn. Literally, we are fodder, we are cattle, whatever, however you want to word it. But that's for us with our eyes open. For all the other people, it's like, oh no, man, the problem can't be that big, can it? And this is, again, this is, it's all, yes, the answer to your question is definitely yes. If everyone started communicating, not a problem. But the fact is, you've got so many thieves and fools infesting the water in between all those little pinpoints of light that you could join together like a dot to dot, and you could have a huge network of people. Unfortunately, you've got a massive swathe of just muddy brains in between. You actually have, the information has to wade past all that lot before it gets to the next point of light. And obviously, that's why, you know, stations like Speak Free Radio are so important, because it is getting the message out there to a lot of people that obviously you wouldn't normally know it. But the short answer to your question is yes, but crikey, it's a tall order. It's a tall order. From where I'm sat right now, it is a tall order.
Dave Gahari, your thoughts on if whites and blacks woke up, and by the way, hats off to you. You turned us on to both Reed and Io, and it's very cool that Io's book's coming to Money Tree Publishing, so that is exceptional.
Yeah.
So, Dave, do you think if the whites and blacks wake up, we could eliminate this Jew cancer?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know if the combination or the marriage, let's say, of those two races will have more effect against the Jew cancer, which is exactly what it is, as you so eloquently state. I'm so happy, you know, you do. I'm so happy to have met you, to have met all of you, because, you know, it's not like I've been doing this for my whole life. I have been doing it for a while, and there have been people who have done it way before me, like Mr. Scott's grandfather, which I was unaware of, because I don't really have the time to spend listening to shows, but it's a great honor to be on the show with him. His grandfather, Henry Ford, people hundreds and thousands of years before us have been trying to point out the Jew poison, and really with very little effect, which it's pretty amazing if you think about it, where you can have, you know, an eloquent writer or speaker not able to have really almost no impact at all. And so, of course, I've thought about that, and I've wondered, why is that? That everything that these very bright people do is neutralized by the Jew. And, of course, it's the Jews' media, because Maleficus used the term idiots for the people at the top. I would use that term for the people underneath, at the bottom. They are the real idiots. They are the real morons, you know? And so I'm at the point now where I will start, because I don't, you know, I don't talk to people, but I will say, you know, whatever fact we're talking about, you know, you don't know this, right? You know why? Because you're stupid. Because you're an idiot. And you know why you're an idiot? Because you don't learn. That's why. So those at the bottom are stupid idiots. Some people say, oh, don't call them stupid. They just don't know. They're not educated. Well, they can get educated, right? Okay. Now, of course, the people who are working 2, 3, 4 jobs just to survive in this Jew world, and they are the scum that always seem to rise to the top. And that's just the way it is. So what do we do, right? And I've said this for a while. You guys have heard me say it. Some of you have. But we need our own media. That's it. We don't need missiles or bombs, bullets. We need our own media. Because the Jew has the media firmly in their control, and it started way long ago, and even with cartoons, right? You can bet that there is that hidden Holocaust theme running through a cartoon that all of us grew up with, and we don't even know it. We were able to throw off the shackles of the Jew, but most people are not. It's just embedded in them. And the only way we can do it is, yes, Speak Free Radio is great. It really is astounding. And the growth of it is astounding. But I was, as I told you, I was traveling, and I was driving somewhere, I can't remember where, maybe through Tennessee or Alabama, when you guys had Reed on. And I had my cell phone with me, of course, and I listened to Speak Free Radio. The car that I had rented, it could go into its system somehow. It's linked. And so it was like listening to radio while we're driving down the road. And I thought, and my sister was with me because I picked her up in Tennessee to bring her to the wake, and I was driving her back. And I said to her, could you imagine if this show or this network was on every car and anyone could just turn it on and listen to it like that? This is radio. This is really exciting stuff. And that's the point. When Speak Free Radio is carried on, let's say, Sirius or whatever, another satellite network, or when we do have our own television network because we have to, then in 10 years, roughly, let's say, we're going to start to have an impact. We're going to produce the news that we want the people to hear. We're not going to pay attention to the Jews media because there's no reason to, as if they don't even exist. And we are going to present good, positive news, not news meant to stir the racial hatred, to pit the races against one another. We're not going to exclude race, which the New York Times started doing in 1946. We're going to tell all of the information, all of the facts that the people need to make an educated decision. And that's what people are desperate for. And that's what Speak Free Radio is doing. My hat's off to Paul English and Miss Lily for all the work they're doing on Speak Free Radio. And the other arms that we have out there now and that we're putting together. And quickly, in reference to Io, I heard him on a show of a friend of mine, friend and colleague, and I contacted Io, and we hit it off. And he was just, very excited to be working with me and with all of you. And this was before you guys met him. And he didn't know, as a black nationalist, that we were cool. He thought, maybe we're not going to be able to do things together. But when we spoke, he was like, holy mackerel. Yeah, awesome. And not using those terms. But, blacks and whites are different, obviously. And they speak the way that they speak, and we speak the way that we speak. And that's fine, okay? But we can communicate, you know? And he's very excited about the future. I told him, let's get you on some shows. Let's get you, you know, known out there to a lot of people. Sell your book when the time is right. Because he wanted me to sell the book right away. And I just can't. Because I just don't have the time to do it yet. Because I have to go through the whole thing. I said, and then we'll, you know, we'll do it through Money Tree Publishing as soon as I can get to it. And he's cool with that. So he's on your show. I'm glad that's working out. I didn't get to listen to the latest. And he's going to go on other shows. Reed contacted me last year. I didn't know who he was. And he asked if we would carry his book. And, of course, it was a manuscript. And so I took a look at it, and I saw right away that he does what's completely necessary, and that is expose the Jew. Because, as I said before, I don't talk to people anyway. But if you're not exposing the Jew, then why would I waste 1 second on you? So his book, his manuscript was all about the Jew, because he learned it, as you know, from his dad all those years. And so we spent probably about, of course, I got hit with the COVID bioweapon that stopped it, that stalled it out. Soon after I got home, we started again. So we probably spent 6 months putting that together. And, you know, a book is very difficult. You know, it takes much, much longer than you would imagine because it has to be perfect. And even when you think it's perfect, it's not, because you missed something here or missed something here. But yeah, it's a great book. I'm so happy to have met those guys. I'm so happy to have met you guys. We're going to work together, and we are going to accomplish this. It's just, as Maleficus was saying, it's just going to require really Herculean efforts on all of our parts, because it's not just going to be going on, you know, the radio here and talking, which all of us can do, but it's going to, you know, encompass a lot more than that, because we're going to have to meet with people that we normally don't hang out with, people with deep pockets, and talking to them and saying, you obviously know we're in deep shit. We need to get our country back. I know you want to get the country back. This is what we got to do it. Are you ready to do it? And if they come back and say, we're in trouble, but I can't do that. Okay, great, thanks for your time. And then you go next, you move to the next one. There are people out there with deep pockets who are not afraid, like Reed. Like I told Reed before we put this thing down, I said, Reed, you have a business. You know, you're a respectable businessman. This could have an impact on your business, on your company, and on you. I just want you to know that before we go forward with it. He said, I know, I thought about it, Dave. Basically, he said, I'm an American, and I need to tell the truth, and I need to get this out. I don't care. I said, okay. Those are the people we need, right? We need people who are not afraid, who aren't scared if Antifa is going to show up at their house, right? I mean, I'm all out there, right? The address, everything, phone number. I've never had Antifa here. A lot of people are afraid, and some of them are afraid for no reason. We all got to get together, fight, let them know how we feel, and take this Jew poison down.
That's awesome. Scorpio,
yeah, great answer.
Well, Giuseppe, you pose a complex question, and you know, I think it's LTC Rolt in the chat room said is sort of like a version of big tent nationalism. We have to draw in everybody we can, and certainly, you know, blacks are really being used as a weapon right now by the Jew, and that's been a strategy of theirs for quite a long time, probably since slavery. And so it's good to see someone like Io, who's really wide awake, he's articulate and certainly intelligent, come forward with his take on things. We don't have to agree on everything. That's not the point. The point, though, is to see that we have a common problem for everybody. And as Io says, you know, I want to survive this. I want my people to survive it. And we need to think the same way, because they have the same fate chalked up for everybody. And they're going after, you know, white Europeans first and foremost right now. But this fate they have designed is for the entire world, for everyone but themselves, of course. So I think, too, you know, America has been turned into sort of this multicultural wonderland through immigration. And I think one of the messages that has to come out at some point is that we need a moratorium on immigration. Like, how about just for a year? Let's start with a year, because they've weaponized immigration. I think a certain degree of immigration is healthy for a society, a civilization. But when you weaponize it to the replacement level, to where you're bringing in every type of person in the world who have nothing in common with the nation they're moving to, obviously it's designed to destroy the nation and to completely alter its very character. But I've never heard anybody in like the right-wing circles in politics say, hey, it's time for a one-year moratorium on immigration till we get our own house in order. So, you know, again, I think you're onto something. We do have to come together with anyone that is willing to face the truth. And I think, you know, to pigeonhole what has to be our people, it's not going to work. We're past that point now, and we really have to reach out to as many people as possible to bring forward a new reality. Because, as I said in my opening, this Jewish hellscape that they have planned for the world is going to be most unpleasant for everybody but themselves. So, excellent question. And I think possibly what I'd like to do is kind of do a reverse roundtable and have the guests sort of see if they have something on their mind or a question they want to pose to the panel. So, Blackbird, Frederick, why don't you start it off? What's been on your mind, and what would you like to sort of bring forth to the think tank we have assembled today?
I guess just to continue on with this theme of, you know, we're dealing with identity politics and weaponized identity politics. And we talk a lot about the Cartman drama triangle, that all of these groups have been told by the chicken swingers that they are victim groups and the Jews are there to help them. And unfortunately, white people, white Europeans, especially white European, straight white European males, always seem to be the oppressor group in this equation, right? So we're the bad guys in all these equations. And so while I wasn't trying to dodge Giuseppe's question, so just kind of see, you know, can it happen with blacks and whites working together and the rest of these victim groups that have been so radicalized against us for, you know, like you said, the Jews have been controlling the media for a very long time and gradually weaponizing it with this slime mold strategy of theirs to say, you know, you're the victim, that's, you know, the oppressor over there. We've got to destroy everything they built so we can bring in the new world order. So I guess my question is, how do we approach all of these various cultural Marxist victim groups that have been so radicalized against us into an awakening to make them understand what the reality of Talmudic Noahide law is going to mean in a post-Kalergi plan, post-Cloward-Piven plan, you know, universal communism under Talmudic Noahide law. You know, so how do you basically, you know, get them to understand that, yeah, after you kill Whitey, you know, when you meet the new boss, you're not going to like it at all. So that, I guess that's my question.
Great question, and it's a good corollary to Giuseppe's question. So Giuseppe, why don't you take it first, and we'll just go around the roundtable to you and Scott and then Dave, and I'll go last. Go ahead, Giuseppe.
That is a good question. I think that I hearken to Dave Gahari's lucid analysis of there's a lot of really stupid people who've been intentionally dumbed down and are easily controlled by these low impulse reaction triggers. And you know, the reality is anyone who has half a brain sees this as a spiritual war, but instead it's an identity politics war. And the real war is team devil, right? I mean, the Jew crawled out of the devil's rear end about 6,000 years ago and worshiping Baal. So I guess we could call them the Baal movement, right? So the Baal movement... The Baal movement is really sophisticated at entrancing normies and play upon really first chakra issues like security and safety. So you've got all these magatards who are literally acting in their best against their best interests, you know, supporting the Zio. Everyone calls it neoconservatives, but it's really Zio conservatives, which is a bunch of dual citizen traitors at the highest levels of power, fomenting this war with Russia, fomenting the greater Israeli project since 9/11, realistically. And then you've got a lot of blacks who, you know, the Jew media covers all the blacks who chimp out and like throw drinks at the McDonald's clerk if they do something wrong or the fries are cold. The Jew media doesn't pay attention to the 81% of blacks that are working class or above that get it, that are just trying to have a family to function. And you know, that should be the positive role model message, but instead it's, this black guy or this black chick or this black tranny, it's such nonsense, but that is what the Jew media, the Baal movement does. So I don't know, I think meeting Io, and he's, I emailed with him a couple times today, he's all fired up to be part of this, and you know, we got to pull in, we haven't had him on in a while, Lazaro Ensenaro, who's, you know, the Mexican version of Io, and we just have to slowly wake up the sane traditional individuals in every race, and it's vital now that we come together, because together we can win this. Apart, we'll be picked off, basically.
Yeah, good, well said, and... Yeah, and LTC Rolled in the chat is making a good point. Chris Rock was right. He's referring to Chris Rock saying, "I love black people, but I hate niggers." And those are his words, not mine. So there's a lot of truth in that, and it's all about weaponizing the various racial groups to be the lowest vibration, the lowest version of themselves rather than the highest version. Scott, why don't you pick up? Go ahead. What's your take on this?
Well, okay. So, I mean, the way we get people to understand, really, is by putting the information out there. I mean, it's all very well to say that the blacks are being weaponized against the whites, but, going back over to what Io was saying on last night's show, and I only caught the first hour, but as far as I'm concerned, he sees it the other way around. So that's where you've got your mutual ground, you know, and so it's not a case of necessarily, you know, because as you say, as Blackbird said in the question, that, you know, once you've followed through with the Kalergi plan and you've got just a whole race of people that don't really have any cultural heritage or background or roots, what then? You might not like the new boss. The fact of the matter is, right now, we don't have to worry about what race, creed, and color they are. They simply need to know the truth. They are our brethren right now, because there are there's a small percentage of us, really, worldwide basis. And the only reason Dave, I used the word idiots for those at the top is because I wasn't quite sure whether I should say the word cunts on Speak Free Radio.
Speak free, brother, speak free.
Well, there we go. I mean, that's the thing. The only thing we need is for people to be awake and receptive. We had a caller in on the last show, on the Perfect Triangle I was on with you last week, and we opened up the calls at the last part of the show. And there was... I think it was Eric, could have been Eric, had called in. And I said to him, I said, people have to, we've all been through all this like nightmare of trying to wake up those around us that we love. But the fact of the matter is, people have to want to wake up. There has to be something in their life that affects them in some way, and they feel some sort of injustice about it and think, ah, hang on a minute, this isn't right. And then they start looking, you know. And I think this is why we've had an influx of this recently, is because, you know, everyone's looked at the COVID narrative and gone, something's not right. So, you know, but with regards to the question, I think simply it doesn't matter. Who we have on our side, as long as they are aware of what the truth is, because as the old phrase goes, the truth will set you free, you know. And as Andy says at the beginning of his show, every show, you know, to learn who rules over you, simply find out who you're not allowed to criticize. And that's the basis of it, you know. So it's like, you know, we had Io, but we had Frank Raymond on the show. I don't know, do you remember we had Frank Raymond on Andy's show a little while back? Right. He's an Indian guy who is standing up for white rights, you know, because he sees what's going on, and he says to himself, well, I wouldn't have this in mine. We wouldn't have this in our country. Why are you white people accepting it in yours, you know? But yeah, the short answer is our allies are simply the people that know the truth, and they are the people that are gonna, doesn't matter creed, color, you know, melatonin ratio or language barrier, it doesn't matter. Do you know the truth? And that's the first rung of the ladder, really.
Yeah, good answer. And I think it's hard for people to see this, because it's hard to wrap your mind around the idea that your government has been taken over by a foreign intelligence or a foreign source and has been weaponized against the people it's supposed to be governing or helping. And I think once that realization is made, then other things can fall into line. Dave, why don't you take the stage here? What's your answer to the great question posed by Blackbird?
I'm going to be quick. I don't think that that's possible. What Maleficus said, that we need to get the people who get it, you know, we all need to get together, no matter what color, no matter what anything, religion, whatever. When they get it, they go, oh, I see, it's the Jew. Then we can do something. But those unwashed masses, the really dumb ones, are never going to get it. So I don't think there's any value in trying to get them along with. They're too busy getting their tattoos, looking at their stupid cell phones, and going on Jewbook, Facebook, and sending out, you know, images or videos or whatever it is. So these are like the proles of, you know, 1984. These are the proletariats. These are, you know, they'll always be these people. And they always have been these people. So to think that we could get even them on our side, nah. They're just going to go to the side that, you know, gives them, you know, the tattoos and the cell phone and, you know, anything else that makes them happy. So I think we just need, just like anything, right, what is it, like 3%? We just need that small percentage of smart people who know the score and understand what has to be done. We need a couple of leaders who can elucidate the issue in a way that this group of smart people can comprehend and can move forward. And again, it really is, in my opinion, only the people who understand the nature of the problem, the true enemy. Once you know who the true enemy is, and once you know why we can't talk about that true enemy in civilized society, then we have the right people and we can mount a force and do what has to be done. I'm not talking about anything physical. I might be using some, you know, jingoistic type terminology, but I'm not talking about hurting anyone physically. All I'm saying is that we need to unite as a team, as a group, and get it done. No one person is going to be able to do this. It has to be all of us. And the most important thing, I think, is that the people involved in this movement, if you want to call it that, are without ego. That is something that really destroys everything. If someone has an ego, I personally want nothing to do with them. Just like I don't want to have anything to do with somebody who doesn't know about the true problem. And the main reason is because we're out of time.
Wow. Great answer, Dave. You brought up some great points there. And what I find interesting, too, is that going back to the original question is that, you know, the international Jew likes to say, well, hey, we're all this one big multicultural family. But then what they proceed to do is pick apart every little racial group and set them against each other in this fight while they sit back and wring their hands together, you know. And that's, people have fallen into that. And Dave, you're right. There's a certain percentage of people that will simply go along with whatever the powers that be say. It doesn't matter how absurd it is or how detrimental it is to themselves. They will go along with it like robots. They will eat bugs. Bugs. Is that what I'm, yes, sir. Yeah, you know, and so there are a certain percentage of people that are just not reachable. But I do think the numbers of people who are open to learning the truth are greater than ever before. And that's certainly to our advantage. When I started on this journey back in the late 80s, early 90s, I mean, I was a nut. People thought I was crazy. And I don't get that so much anymore. Even when I go talk to a complete stranger, I don't walk up to complete strangers and go, oh, by the way, did you know that the Jews run the world and they're trying to depopulate the world? I don't start there. You've got to start the message at a place where, you know, it's kind of like a college course. You can't start with the most advanced information. You have to sort of start with basic things and kind of help move people along to a greater understanding. And I think going back to what Dave said, we do have to, the media is crucial. We have to have our own media. We have to be able to reach people's minds with information, because right now it's being filled with deliberately toxic ideologies and toxic information and lies by omission. That's, I think it was Scott that said that lie by omission is very powerful. Because you're not really lying. You're just leaving out an essential fact that would change your whole perception of what you're thinking about. So, interesting question and good answers, guys.
Oh, great answers. Thank everybody. Yeah, that was good stuff. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. Scott, why don't you step aboard and what would be your question or the idea you want to pose to the think tank assembled here today?
Okay, so there's a lot of stuff coming out, and this is, Scorpio and Giuseppe are familiar with my mindset and my thought process on this, but we have an awful lot of stuff. And in fact, I've heard it said on your guys' shows a few times, you know, what's the difference between conspiracy theory and the truth? And it's about 6 months, as they say. So we've had an awful lot of stuff coming out. In fact, not just coming out, not even being drip-fed, but now coming in torrents in the mainstream media about how governments behaved over lockdowns and the fact that masks may not have been necessary and we might have made a bit of a mistake using these types of vaccines. And indeed, you've even got the vaccine companies at each other's throats now going, you stole my ideas. So it does seem to me that talking about, you know, the fact that a lot of people are waking up, it does seem to me that, all right, they're waking up in latency to the information that maybe we've been putting out for like the last couple of years. But the fact is the mainstream are coming around to it, and it's getting to the point where the public are actually being riled with these subjects by the mainstream media. So My question to the illustrious panel is, do you see any potential that this potential coming revolution will be governed by the already controlled opposition? So my I've always said that when the revolution occurs, we have to be very mindful of who's heading the cavalry charge. And I see a lot of disinformation, what was considered disinformation, now being put blatantly in the laps of the public. Do you think, in any way, shape, or form, that the mainstream is trying to foment this revolution? I mean, it's almost like they're sat at the top going, what's it going to take for these people to revolt? I mean, we're telling them this, we're telling them that. We've done too good a job. Oy vey. You know, so that's my question. Do you perceive that this revolution, this coming revolution, could be usurped or could already be being managed?
Well, why don't we let Dave Gaheri take that first, and then we'll go Giuseppe and Maleficus, and Blackbird, and I'll go last. So, Dave, go ahead. Take the stage. What's your thoughts on Scott's question?
Yeah, that's a great question. Of course, I don't have the answer to it, but what do I think? I know that these people are scum. I know they're capable of murdering innocent people. I know that they have done that in the past, and they will do that now, and they will do that in the future. But I'm not sure if they're purposefully attempting to rile people up. So as we just saw a couple of days ago, that little nasty garden gnome Jew who was on, I think, CNN, Brian Stetler, or I don't even know what the guy's name is, but you know the one I'm talking about, who had the show about the media.
Seltzer?
What, say again?
Is it Brian Seltzer? Seltzer!
Something like that, yeah. Anyway, this nasty little Jew, who the only reason he's there and has a prime spot is because he's a Jew, because something like that would never be, you know, presented to a public, you know, and not that looks mean everything, but the whole package is nasty. It's a nasty little Jew who was like, you know, kicked around in school and like not paid any attention to. And obviously he's got a grudge. So they put this Jew there to get even with the Goyim. They give him a prime spot, but they axe this Jew. And I think the reason they did was because even CNN, which used to be decent. I mean, I remember, when I was, I think I was 20 when it first started in 1980. And, of course, I didn't know anything. But, you know, at least it had the appearance of, like, you know, a respectable news source. And they even had that black guy there, Bernard Shaw, early on. And it was nice change from, you know, the typical garbage media. And I just want to say this, and I should have said earlier, you guys are making some really great points. I wish I can comment on them all, but obviously we don't have time for that. But thank you for all of the insight and the points you've made. But
top of the hour break, hold that thought, okay. And we'll come back to you after these messages.
Okay, welcome back to the third and final hour of Operation Scorpio, and we've been assembling a think tank, a virtual think tank, with Malefica Scott, Blackbird 9, Dave Gaheri, Giuseppe Vaffanculo, and myself. And, you know, at the top of the hour, Dave was talking, you know, about a lot of things, but, you know, you brought up this Brian Stelzer guy and what a just an awful package he is overall. And, you know, it kind of came to mind, you know, with this, you said, you know, he's on TV because he's Jewish. I think that's about right. And it made me think of that Jeffrey Toobin character. If you recall, he was actually caught jerking off, for lack of a more delicate term, on a video conference call. He forgot to turn his camera off. And despite this, they give him a second. He apologized, and they give him a second chance on CNN and everywhere else. He didn't mean to do it. It was just a bad moment there. Anyone else, it would have completely destroyed their career forever, just having that low of impulse control at that age. But it's a different set of rules when you're talking about the the controllers. So, Dave, you were kind of rudely interrupted by the top of the hour. Did you want to finish up your thoughts there before we move on to the next
speaker? Sure, no problem. And I forgot to mention one thing. I'll just go back. I know Frank Raymond, and he's a great guy. And, yeah, we can – I don't know if I elaborated properly, but, yeah, we can unite the races who are aware no matter what. We're going to do it. But, yeah, we can definitely do that. All I was saying was that I think if they wanted to continue to, force our hand to have us get angry enough that we actually do something, we actually revolt physically, that they wouldn't get rid of a creature such as that little Jew, that little garden gnome Jew, that they just shoot away. Go. Okay, go. No one's watching you anyway, Brian. Just go. They would have kept it there because it's bad enough that we got to look at all these Jews anyway. For anybody who watches TV, I mean, it's Jews interviewing Jews. You know, they're the Jew talking head brings on the Jew expert to let you know what's going on. So on top of it, you got this little annoying Jew. So for them to say, go, Jew, and this Jew is like fighting too. He's like, he took a swipe at, John Malone, you know, the owner of this network. So there is some dissension within their ranks. I don't think they're organized. I think they're just following the Jew editorial playbook across all of their platforms. But I don't think they have it in mind that they want to incite us to go all the way. Obviously, they hate us. That's clear. Fortunately, it's becoming more clear to more people. But I don't think they have any type of plan to do anything like that. Otherwise, Stelter, if that's how you say his name, would still be in his cushy seat with his cushy job, making his cushy income. And of course, he's going to land somewhere like MSNBC or one of those pieces of garbage networks. But just the fact that they got rid of him, that they're shaking it up, that they want more viewers, I think that's evidence that their main goal are shekels. It's not, you know, let's get the white guys angry, you know, the angry white guys. So that's what I think. I could be wrong, but that's what I think.
Interesting answer. Giuseppe, go ahead, sir.
What was the question again? I was monitoring and doing chat.
Yeah, maybe Scott could pose the question again go ahead.
So, do you think that the revolution could be usurped? In synopsis, basically, that was the question. Do you think that they are fomenting a revolution with all the information that's being put out now, and people are getting angry about it? People are getting angry that the bass players out of their favorite rock band from the 90s have dropped down dead after having their jab, and you know, all that sort of thing. And it's becoming very mainstream. With all the stuff going on in British government at the moment, not sure that they handled it correctly, and masks this, was it necessary, and blah, blah. And we've got pharmaceutical companies now saying, oh, we might have made a mistake with these vaccines. So, and we've got all these facts and figures and statistics coming out now, which are being, you can guarantee, as I said, that's been mentioned on your shows several times, what's the difference between conspiracy theory and mainstream news, and it's about 6 months, as you rightly say. So that being said, are they attempting to foment a revolution amongst, it's like my mate said to me a little while back. He said, where do you see all this going with all this war in Ukraine, and do you think it's going to tip everything over the edge? And I said, well, chances are it is probably going to tip everything over the edge, at least that's what they'd like to happen. I said, but what's going to happen eventually is that everyone's going to turn around and say, right, we've had enough of this. Let's overthrow these people. That's when we've got to be vigilant of who's heading the cavalry charge. That's my point. So my point being is that, they could plan for this revolution to happen, and they can build back better off the back of our own efforts and make us think we've done it ourselves. Or do you think that's just completely an impossibility?
Oh, I completely agree that it's the latter. That, I mean, we've all read the protocols how many times. This is everything occurring is right out of the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. And these soulless parasites are incredibly clever and Machiavellian, and they're running 10 psyops at once and literally throwing them up against the wall and see which one slides off immediately, which one sticks for a while, and then they got 10 more ready to throw up. And the two greatest examples that support your postulate are that the Tea Party, Taxed Enough Already, was an organic movement that was taken over within like a month by that parasite Dick Durbin for the neoconservatives, and that led to the Trump-tards. And on the other side, the left side, Occupy Wall Street was an organic movement that lasted for about 10 days before it was completely usurped by the Antifa BLM types, which are both controlled by the deep state, the swamp, as the Trump-tards like to say. So yeah, man, it's, you are 100% accurate that they want it all to be a chaotic usurpation, and then they will have their Harley guy right there ready to him. Why Harley guy is the guy who explained how the towers came down seconds after they did. So they're going to have their Harley guy every which way ready to step in and turn the organic uprising into a synthetically controlled one.
Yeah, good answer. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss. I think that's the scenario we have to avoid.
Right.
At all costs. And I think we should also question, you know, the very nature of the systems that have been created around us, because those are meant to enslave as well as anything else. So Blackbird 9, what's your take on the great question at hand right now?
Great question, great answers. Wow, I'm sitting over here taking notes. This is really good. Yeah, but as far as, you know, controlled opposition, once, you know, I had the 9/11 changed everything moment, and, you know, you think, okay, who, the obvious false flag, you know, what they couldn't have done, it's physically impossible. So who did it? Who had the motive, the means, opportunity? So you realize who your adversary is. So then you do a deep dive on who is this adversary. You know thy enemy, and, you know, what are not only their objectives, but what are their methods? And that led me down that trail of, you know, Zabataeanism, Frankism, the Illuminati, Rothschild, and this black magic of, you know, just how dark these systems are. And that, you know, so much of it is about controlling others against their will. And being this entity that thinks they're above good and evil, and the ends justify the means, and power is everything, and you just see communism as an extension of these, you know, black arts of control. And so this idea of the contingency plan, like Giuseppe was saying, it's like, yes, yeah, these traitors like Dr. Robert J. Ammon, who went to American universities and probably had his, you know, ticket paid, goes to Israel and sits there and does these scenarios of game theory to say, well, the Americans will react this way in this scenario to 85% of blah, blah, blah. And so I always go back to their idea of, yeah, we can manipulate everything. And if we need to control somebody or a system, you know, we'll put the leader in place. And so you go and you read the protocols that we were told were a fabrication, no, a forgery, right? And then you realize that it was after studying not only the protocols, but also Henry Ford's analysis of the protocols and people like Nesta Webster and hers analysis of the protocols, that people like Brave New World Huxley, you know, came up with his model of this, you know, hidden hand controlling everything, you know, above the alphas. There was always that dark energy controlling everything, right? And then Orwell, you know, he did 1984. And of course, you had Emanuel Goldberg in 1984. That was the, you know, you thought it was the, you know, revolution, the underground, et cetera, but you find out they were actually working with Big Brother the whole time. And so, yeah, that's just part of the model. So anytime you have an organic movement, yes, these people are going to try to, you know, what is the old saying? If there, whenever there's a movement, one of their puppets will run to the front of it and take it over, you know. And so this is one of the things we're going to be have to be vigilant about. And, you know, I guess I also think of like the Q movement and Donald Trump. You know, that's the big argument. Are they organic or are they synthetic, you know? The reality is we are seeing this network being taken apart piece by piece. You know, you just think taking down Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, that was huge. And people making the dots to this is, you know, Israeli intelligence blackmail operation. You know, these people are at war with you. They hate you with every fiber of their bodies. They want you dead. Wakey, wakey, eggs and bakey. So, yeah, you know, we got to be careful with our potential of the controlled opposition. But when you are dealing with truth and people that, you know, say we don't care about the charismatics, we care about the truth. If you're speaking the truth, I'll listen to you. If you're, you know, trying to manipulate me, then I'm going to move away from you. And it's amazing in this movement how quickly people, you know, get exposed as bad actors. You can time it with an egg timer now. People see through the BS. Even the most trained Mossad, you know, counterintelligence operatives, you know, they're getting outed. So I think, you know, we have the truth. We just have to communicate better and, you know, support people that are real leaders and expose people that are these Judas goats, you know, false agents. So that's my take, I guess.
Interesting, Frederick. And it brings up the question, is a leaderless movement possible? Is that a possible thing given human nature? I think it's a good question. And you brought up a really good point about charisma. You know, Donald Trump obviously has a lot of charisma, but it's pretty clear to most people that he is in on this, you know, to some degree or another. And so what's the thing that holds a movement together? Is it a charismatic leader or is it an idea or a concept? And I think we have to ask ourselves, what does freedom mean? What is freedom? I think a lot of people don't even have a definition of, well, you want to be free. You don't want to be under the yoke of the Jew. Well, then what is freedom to you? Does freedom mean paying 30% of your money in income tax and working hard and supporting the foreign war efforts? Or, you know, what exactly is freedom? I think that has to be defined. So many words, you know, lack a real definition. Like, what is a conservative now? Does conservative mean supporting Israel? Because apparently that's one of the major definitions of being a conservative now is having absolute fealty to the state of Israel. No matter what they do, they're our greatest friend. With friends like that, who needs enemies? But so I think those are the questions that have to be asked and answered. And I don't know if a leaderless movement is possible because given human nature, but Blackbird, you brought up a great point. They always are, you know, able to get someone in to take the movement over and then steer it into the rocks. And that's how happened countless times. To me, all these movements have been commandeered and infiltrated. It's a science now. The FBI and other intelligence agencies have it down to a science. And this even goes back to the 1950s. Where they would actually send agents into UFO discussion groups to monitor what they were saying because they were worried they might be possibly communist or subversive or wanted to see what you know intelligence they may have. So even obscure groups in the 1950s, like some of these UFO groups, were infiltrated by the intelligence agencies. And, of course, most people don't even know that that's the game. Like, we don't even know what the game is, which is you have these intelligence agencies that want to infiltrate every movement and control them and steer them into the rocks. Most people aren't even aware of that. So awareness is a big part of the scenario, of the equation as well. Well, I think everyone's covered that. Giuseppe, did you get in on that already? Or?
Yep, right before you.
Yeah, okay, great. So maybe, Dave, why don't you take the helm?
Dave's on a call right now, so why don't give him a couple minutes. He's ordering up Uber Eats.
Okay, hopefully some organically grown crickets with a zero carbon footprint with extra barbecue sauce.
There you
okay.
go.
Well,
mac and flies, mate.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I guess there's a good question. Is a leaderless movement possible? Is that a pipe dream given human nature, or is it? Because how do we overcome this scenario where every movement gets a Judas goat leader put in the forefront, and then off into the wrong direction we sail? What are your guys' thoughts on that? Maybe, well, Blackbird, why don't you take this first, since you're kind of the one that posed this scenario?
Well, I love the question about, you know, what is the end game? I mean, what are we fighting for at this point? What does freedom even mean? And, you know, you ask that across the demographic, you know, what is freedom to you? You know, in this country. And so, you know, part of this leaderless revolution is, well, what if instead of having a central leader, we had, you know, grassroots local leaders, and realizing, you know, that we are in a existential battle. I mean, that's the big thing that I think we're realizing, is this is beyond just a civil war in America. This is beyond a civil war in the UK. You know, our adversary is playing for the big marble, right? They want the whole world, and they want us gone. That's part of their endgame requirements, to put in what they want. And every time we try to, you know, identify it, you know, they have a plan in place to slap you down. And the points about, you know, they've been doing this for a very long time. It's like, yeah, you know, before there was even the OSS, yeah, these people were masters of this. We have ancient folk tales in our history about the big-nosed goblins that live in the woods, live under the caves, etc. Don't trust them. They're going to do these things to you. And they just have gotten more and more evolved, you know, more, and then the technology of now, you know, we've gone beyond COINTELPRO, MK Chaos to, you know, Unit 8200, Unit 269, you know, all these Mossad operatives, you know, that basically go and, you know, study dirty tricks in Israel and then come into Western countries to undermine them. And they write about it, that, oh, isn't it great that we have so many alumni of Unit 8200 controlling the world's telecommunication grid and keeping it, you know, clear of those nasty uppity Amalek that are trying to take their own lands back, right? And so, you know, that thing of, you know, will a single leader rise up? Or is this just going to be at a grassroots level guerrilla war, fighting these cultural Marxist cells at the local level in a rural, suburban, and urban environment? I mean, is that the kind of civil war we're seeing as we, you know, try to make out, you know, what it is we're even fighting for, and white people are waking up that this is an existential battle beyond nationalism, a left, right, conservative, liberal, etc. So I guess that's my take on it.
Yeah, good answer. I think too, you know, these words have to be defined, and I think one thing that has to be an objective is decentralization of control. The closer so-called government gets to the people that it is governing, the more real things get. Because if, you know, you live down the street from the guy that's running stuff and he's screwing everything up, he's got skin in the game. He's not ensconced away in a secret hideout somewhere in underground in Washington, D.C., just waiting for the chaos to fall out. So I think that's got to be one element in this. And I don't know, Dave, what are your thoughts? You were indisposed there for a minute. What are your thoughts on the question at hand?
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
Oh, no problem. I mean, you're a busy man.
I should have mentioned earlier a colleague of mine and maybe yours could use our prayers. Tom Goodrich, the author of Hellstorm and many other books, is hospitalized right now. And he's fine, you know, but, you know, you never know how these things are going to turn out. So just send your warm thoughts to Tom and his lovely wife, Michelle. And I wanted to mention that. And that's what the call was about. So can you, and I'm sorry because I was distracted, but if you could just give me a quick summary of what we're talking about, the question, and I can.
Oh, absolutely. Just to kind of sum it up in a nutshell, Blackbird brought up the point that, you know, so often movements are co-opted by, you know, some type of Judas goat kind of a leader that's put in place by essentially what amounts to intelligence agencies or the controllers. And so I posed the question, well, is a leaderless movement possible? Is that realistic or is that a pipe dream? Can a movement be created around an idea or a set of principles rather than a leader, or possibly have multiple leaders, regional leaders, or I'm not sure how that would go. These are the kind of things we have to start charting out. But one thing I'm sure of is that it has to be decentralization. Part of the goal of what we're, you know, what are we fighting for, right? What is it we want? What is freedom? What does that actually mean? And part of the goal has to be decentralization of power and decentralization of control over the means of production and the supply chain.
Yeah, I, and again, you know, I don't know. I suspect that something like that could happen. But then you might have a situation, as has sprung up endless times throughout history, where you have someone who's not happy with the decentralization and they want to use force to centralize things. So I think it can be done. I think that type of scenario could unfold, but I think just as quickly you could have some unscrupulous character come along, or characters come along and reverse all the good that might have been done from such decentralization.
Well, what would your definition of freedom be? As you know, I posed the question, well, is freedom, you know, paying 30% of your income in income tax and swearing loyalty to Israel? What does being a conservative mean? What's the definition of those two terms for you, Dave?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, you know, like the saying goes about living in a free country. If we lived in, you know, a free country, it wouldn't be so expensive or cost so much to live here. You know, we're at a point where why this country was founded by our great forerunners, taxation without representation being one of the reasons, we're at a point now where we are there. We are being taxed to support worthless life forms living in this country. Somebody made a comment in the chat about 70% of black kids have no father in the home. So most blacks aren't too concerned with family formation. I don't want to spend my valuable time trying to reform them. Blacks need to fix themselves, not a job for white people. It never works. That's true. Blacks do need to fix themselves. But this government is taking our tax money and creating a situation where 70%, and I don't know if that's the correct number, I thought it was higher, of black kids have no father. And, of course, they're turning to crime, and they're ruining white lives and white families every day, every hour you see it. Of course, the Jews media won't report on it. When the occasional white guy does something to a black person, it's national news for weeks. When blacks continue to murder and assault violently whites constantly. The Jews media made sure in 1946 they took out the race to set the stage for today, and they continue to do that. So I don't want my tax dollars going to support non-working blacks or whites or any race. I don't want my tax dollars going to blacks so the women can have 18 kids with 18 different fathers, and the taxpayer is picking up the tab because that's what's happening. I don't want my congressman or woman or senator pledging allegiance to a little piece of shit country in the Middle East that was created out of nothing and is occupying the rightful denizens there. I don't want money going to those son of a bitches. It shouldn't. That's my tax dollars. Use it for our country. Rebuild the roads, the bridges, get health care, whatever it is for the most needy. Do what has to be done to support your own people, not some asshole in the desert, not some scumbag in the ghetto. Support our own people. Then think about something and then really bring it to the people, to the voters, to the citizens, and ask them, hey, do you mind if we allow 83% non-whites into America? And in 50 years, you're going to be a minority? No. These assholes in Congress would never do that. They could give a shit about us. They serve Israel and they serve Jews. And if anyone doubts that, figure out the percentage of money that comes from Jews and Jewish groups and goes to all the parties, both parties, any other party, anywhere. They own the United States, and it's not that hard to do. They figured out it's only $100,000 to buy a congressman. That's it. And the numbers bear it out. But when you've got 75% of all the money going into Democratic campaign coffers coming from Jews and Jewish groups, if you don't recognize that that's a problem, you're a moron. You're just so stupid. 2% of the population and a much smaller percentage of those giving money, 75% of all Democrat campaign dollars come from Jews and Jewish groups. And you don't even know that Jews own your country? And you're a conservative? You're a joke, okay? Conservatives are a freaking joke. Everybody's a... can I curse? Because I feel
speak
like...
Free, speak free.
Everybody's a fucking joke. And the reason, I said it before, the reason they're a fucking joke is because they're fucking stupid. Because they don't know shit. And all they got to do is pick up a fucking book. You pick up a book, moron. His grandfather's book. Pick it up, jackass. It's from 1954. Pick it up and learn. And then maybe we'll talk to you. That's why we're fucked. Because they're so stupid.
Yeah. Well, that's a hard to argue with that. And yeah. I think the epitome of the modern conservative is someone like Sean Hannity, just a servile bootlicker for Israel, and just wants to keep things rolling along the way they are. Don't change anything. Everything's fine. And, you know, the inflation is really outrageous. I said multiple times, I think the real rate of inflation is probably 25% and up to 50%, depending on what exact area you're talking about. The idea that renting a one-bedroom apartment is $2,000 in much of California is outrageous. And these things have, this is not sustainable, as they say. It really isn't. And the whole thing is coming apart very rapidly. That's why they have to have all these distraction force to fight it over as they restructure everything. Giuseppe, why don't you take it, and then we'll let Scott jump in. Go ahead, sir.
Well, hold on. Hold on a minute. I want to know how Dave Gahari really feels.
He's holding back on us.
I had this building up because some things happened that are unrelated to this. But sometimes I'll get pissed. And I just – there's nothing else to say. And there's no other word that expresses it better than the F word.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah, I'm just, at this point, I'm just really, it's, and I'll calm down, but, you know, people are just so freaking stupid. I mean, that's the problem.
Yeah, and it's tragic. I was just doing pre-show prep, and I came across this meme, and I should have saved it, otherwise I didn't, but there was a three-panel meme on one of the social media platforms, and the first panel, it was like two well-dressed white guys facing each other, younger guys, like, and the one says, well, you know, I'm the first one on the right is kind of like the Clueless cat, and he goes, oh, I can't believe that. It's come out now that I'm paraphrasing, the Jubonic Jew job is bad for me. You know, I believed it all. And then the second panel to the left is the fellow goes, I've been trying to tell you for 3 years that this is a plot, and goes on and on, all the facts we all know. And then the third panel, the money shot, is that Clueless dude saying, well, why didn't they tell us on TV? And that's exactly it, that so many people look to television, look to the Jew-controlled media, look to the Jew-controlled government, look to Jew-controlled academia and the fake scientism, the corporate science lies that's occurred for a long time. And you know, and now the Jew-infested churches that used to somewhat tell the truth, especially like the Catholic religion, they totally knew what the Satanic Jew was all about. And now the Pope is a crypto Jew. So how about that, as far as installing your traitors in the highest levels of power? And the Jews done it with the Catholic Church. They've done it with the American federal government. They've done it with every European government right now. So there's a former friend of ours who is a pretty bright guy, but he's pretty warped in a lot of ways. And he's like, only anarchy will change things. It's like, you know, you're dating back to the Egyptian Empire 6,000 years ago, there's always been a pyramidical hierarchical structure where the sheep look towards their gods. A lot of these empires, it's the god emperor, the god king. And so you're suddenly gonna go from that, which is almost like in the genetics of humans, to suddenly, oh yeah, everybody's okay, play amongst yourselves. It's not going to happen. So Scorpio, your idea of, you know, people who are awake creating parallel societies with private membership things, educate your children, don't ask for permission from the Jew-controlled Department of State Education, just homeschool your kids. Don't, you know, until that kind of momentum builds up, that there's enough independence that people can start to get independent candidates who are loyal to us in local and regional forms of government. I mean, the federal election system is a farce, you know, but, you know, every 2 years I go vote harder. I know it'll change. No, well, and I don't even bother voting anymore until there's a legitimate way to get independent third party candidates elected. It's just masturbation. It's just a waste of time. And so we got a long way to go, but the best way to go is hooking up with people like Io, Reed, Sainsbury, all of us. We're tight as tight now. And there's a lot of other people. You know, I'm from the Midwest, working class roots. My whole family, who's still alive, lives there. They're turning on people who would never think of anything that I'm saying or were saying, you know, 5 years ago. Now they're like, oh yeah, your brother's right, man. I love his shows. 5 years ago, if we were doing this, and when I used to go back home and I'd say these things, they would look at me like I was a leper. They'd change the topic to, oh, how about the Packers? You think they can do it this year? Well, you know what? They're not talking about the Packers so much anymore, which is a good thing, and I'm getting the sense that that's happening in a lot of communities outside the homo-controlled metroplexes and the Jew-controlled metroplexes. So that's what we have to do. I mean, we have to – it's word of mouth, I think. It's the only way. And then we have to somehow, you know, create a structure where leadership is loyal to the people. You know, even in our lifetimes, it was. I mean, look at the 70s or the 80s when we were boys and then we turned into young men. The government cared, and both Democrats and Republicans – congressmen and senators used to go home on weekends because they knew they had to answer to their constituency when the vile kike jumped in and flooded the federal government and the election process with money, these traitors no longer give a rat's ass what their constituency has to say, because they're guaranteed, wink, 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 we'll let Dominion count your votes, Nancy Pelosi, Mitch McConnell, Dianne Not-So-Feinstein, every which way. So somehow we start locally, we start with a parallel system like Scorpio so lucidly and intelligently observed, and we build that momentum till we can start to take down the federal system. But that's the last and the hardest element, I think.
Great point, Giuseppe. Really well said. Yeah, and I think we need to quit asking for permission to engage in commerce. These, you know, private membership clubs, whatever you want to call them, you know, like they're making it really difficult for cattle farmers to sell their cattle and make money. Well, you know, go outside the system that we've been entrained to use. Sell directly to your customers. That's happening. You know, this is the sort of thing that's actually happening in real time right now. And these are stopgap, solutions. As we move forward, you know, you can't just, like you said, you can't just skip forward a little. Time to abolish the federal government. We're not anywhere close to that, because we're going to have to just start creating ways to survive what's coming, because they want to essentially starve us out both economically and physically. So working together with friends, making networks, and stop asking permission to do commerce. We don't need anyone's permission to do commerce between two consenting, willing adults or more. Scott, what's your take on all this, buddy?
Oh, man, there's some absolutely brilliant points coming out from all you guys. Dave, you're right. Dave Gaheri, sorry, we've got two Daves in the room, haven't we? Dave Gaheri, you are completely right. People are stupid. And the unfortunate thing is well, this is like I said earlier about the little pinpoints of light throughout all the mud. You know, the people are so stupid, and you'd like to pity these people, but the fact of the matter is they are actually dragging the rest of us good folks down with them. You know, essentially charity starts at home. So, Scorpio, when you were saying about a leaderless movement, I don't see anything happening movement-wise. What you're really talking about is a leaderless community rather than a movement. A movement is going to have a leader. But if you're talking about local community, this is all down to how much weight we allow, or how much heed and attention we pay to our would-be masters at the top. You know, so we give these people in many respects far too much energy by going, ooh, they've said we have to wear masks now. Should we buy a mask each, darling? Should we do that? You know, even just entertaining it, what we should really be doing is essentially turning our backs on these people and working on local community. You know, just create a council. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what this is about essentially, you know, people are stupid because everyone is looking at the same source. And this goes back to what Dave Gaheri was saying about having our own media. And it also goes back to the fact that because we've got this incessant voice in our ear all the time, or I don't personally, because I don't watch TV and all that kind of thing, but most of the people around us do. If we went back to and got rid of, as you say, got rid of the entirety of centralization, I mean, the first thing we could really do, if you want to start any kind of uprising in local community, and I don't get me, just in case there's anyone from MI5 listening, I'm not about to ask people to blow up mobile phone masts. but the fact of the matter is, if everyone ditched their fucking mobile phones, you would have the essence of a community starting again. This is the wow. Biggest, and this is the thing. Oh, but it's so convenient. I have a lady that I worked for yesterday. Oh, you should really have a mobile. Well, I have got a mobile. Well, why haven't you got it with you? Because I don't want people to be ringing me when I'm busy. How can you run a business without a mobile phone? She said, well, but let's put it this way, Angela. I said, how about if I come and do some work for you and I'm out in the middle of your garden chatting on my mobile phone, organizing other jobs, would you be happy with the service? Oh, I suppose you're right.
Can I interject a second for an American version of this? Right now, George Hobbs, who was going to join in today, but he had family responsibilities, he's been covering in rural Delaware, just down the road from him, there's an Amish organic farm that's been selling raw milk, beef, everything for 40 years, and they have a great business. And now the FDA is sticking their nose in it, and they're trying to shut them down. And what this is probably in every state. And what you need is hopefully the sheriff would step in and deputize everyone who's interested. And you have 300-400 armed people protecting that farm and allowing them to do business. And if the feds come in their SWAT team and all that, they will never invade, because there's too many real Americans. It would be a bloodbath. It would wake up millions of people to what the hell is wrong with this Jew-controlled government, right? That's what needs to be done. You have to protect these organic farmers. You have to do commerce with them. And don't even, you know, if we don't start doing it at that level, it's never going to change. Sorry about that, but I had to make that point.
No, that's it. No, you've hit the nail exactly on the head. People, individuals need to take responsibility and control for their own lives and presence. So, you know, I mean, one of my best mates, his missus, always says, I say, you're always such in a good mood, you know, in such a good mood. And she says, well, you know what? I'm responsible for how my mood affects other people.
Right.
And that's such a nice way to live your life, you know?
Wow.
So, but the point I'm making is that we're all responsible for how we our mood, etc., affects other people around us. But while all our local communities are more interested in what's going on Big Brother, that they're keeping, you know, their own surveillance that they choose to carry around with them, it just, you know, and this is it. Oh, I've had this come up in my news feed today. Putin's a really bad guy, you know, and it's just, this is. From the ground up, it needs to be grassroots community. So when you're talking about leaderless movement, no, I don't think a movement can be leaderless, because by definition, there has to be someone heading the way or something that everyone's looking towards. But I do think that communities, local communities themselves, you know, it's like, you know, I mean, you guys know, I used to be on with Sean Surplus. He was saying when all this COVID restrictions first came in, back in the old days, his grandfather would have gone down to the local police office and said, you're going to enforce what law? And he'd have been like, yeah, all right. Yeah, all right, Joe, I see what you're saying. All right, now don't worry. We're cool up here. You know, because the local community would have dealt with it.
Right, you know, that's a great point.
The local Bobby might have got his marching orders or his notice from head office, but the local community would have gone, like, you know, you're going to enforce what law? So, you know, this is where it comes down to. And I think that there is a way forward with communities. But, you know, people have got to start ditching their mobile phones. And I'm not adverse to the internet. I mean, this wouldn't be happening now if it wasn't for technology. But you don't need to carry it around in your back pocket every minute of every fucking day, you know. And this is what's destroyed everything. This is what is, you know, it's not just the press. It's the fact now that people choose to carry the press and Big Brother around in their back pocket. It's just, you know, how far does this have to go before we realize that this is dystopia, you know?
Brilliant, Scott. I agree completely. And, you know, the beginning of any civilization is production of food and water, having sufficient amounts of those to make sure the people in the neighborhood or the community can sustain themselves. And another thing we're seeing is, you know, yes, they're raiding these farms and they're trying to scare people. But as Giuseppe pointed out, if there's enough people to say, no, you're not coming in here, you're not doing that, they step back. They're not going to come in and shoot 50 people. At a farm, at least not yet. And if they start doing things like that, then the illusion evaporates that we live in a democracy and that we have a free society. So they have to pretend like, well, no, we're not a totalitarian system. We're a democracy. So this really is an interactive game, because one thing we've seen what's happening now is when there's enough pushback, when enough people say, hey, I'm not going along with this, they have no choice but to sort of step back and say, oh, okay, we'll hide in the shadows for now, and then we'll step forward later. So it is an interactive game, It's not just a matter of what they're doing to us. It's what we do in response, and refusing to comply with this nonsense is a big part of it, because we have the right to engage in commerce with anyone we choose to, as long as it's consensual and willing. End of story. It's a God-given right. We have to get back to some of these God-given rights and not be so concerned with the rights that the law gives us, the law made by man. Blackbird 9, why don't you jump in, man? This has just been brilliant. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I guess when you were talking, I just had this image of the system, the system we're up against versus, you know, our European-type systems. And you know, their system is a master-slave system by axiomatic definition. Always has been, always will be. It's just that locked-into-stone master-slave centralized system. And, you know, the brilliance of Western civilization is this idea of distributed peer-to-peer systems, you know, not equality, peer-to-peer. There's a big difference between equality and peer-to-peer systems. And with this megaphone effect of modern mass media, they're just able to amplify their signal of, you know, their new world order, at the same time diminish or attenuate our signal of this distributed peer-to-peer reality. And so when we look at this, you know, how big are they really versus, you know, they've got this big megaphone. And what's, we say, you know, it's a numbers game. If we can wake people up to the Marxist model of two steps forward, one step back, boiling frogs, you know, that, you know, this is how the Marxists work. They, you know, agitate and agitate until they get pushed back, and then they back off halfway, and then they wait for that momentum to die down, and then they push two steps forward, right? And that's why you call it the boiling frog scenario. But, you know, when you deal with numbers of people waking up by the millions, suddenly that big megaphone doesn't have the spell casting ability it used to, and people are saying, no, I'm not going to go along with this, and yes, I can take you to court, you can also play Smash Mouth, but, you know, just to have that pushback of saying, no, this is the line, we're not going any further, you've gone too far, and that magician suddenly losing the power of the mesmer because they've been called out, they've been exposed, and so they realize they're the man behind the curtain, you know, in The Wizard of Oz. It's like, you really aren't the all great and powerful Oz. You know, you were powerful, but that was based on the deception and our own fears. Now we face that and we can confront you. So I guess that was my thoughts on that. So back to you.
Yeah, great, great point. This has been a brilliant conversation all the way around. I, like Blackbird 9 says, you just want to sit here and take notes, because I love when we get all these different minds together, because everyone comes up with stuff that the other guy hadn't thought of. And it's really an honor to be part of this. And we're coming down really to the final 5 minutes or so. And so maybe why don't we just kind of go around the table for a final thought from everybody and see where that takes us. Giuseppe, why don't you go first, sir?
Well, what a wonderful, this was the second of many Speak Free Radio roundtables. It's too bad we didn't have some donators join in and blather on mindlessly for 20 minutes at a time, but you know, maybe we can have that in the future. And just an honor every day. It's we're like the Fellowship of the Ring in Lord of the Rings. This is we're the distinct underdog, but we have God and truth on our side, and it is just an honor to call you gentlemen and many others brothers now and sisters in this movement. And if you don't fight for Team God, and you know, just thinking you can be passive and turn the other cheek and blah blah blah, all the lies of the Abrahamic books, you know, it leads me to that great little allegory is like there was a flood and we were on the roof. And they're up in heaven, and we were praying for a helicopter, and you didn't send us a helicopter, God. And it's like, well, I sent you a rowboat. I sent you a powerboat. Why didn't you get in the boat? And so that's just it. You know, this is the time, and the proper book to look at these days in dealing with the vile, satanic, child-raping Jew is the Code of Hammurabi, not the New Testament.
Interesting. Yeah, brilliant. Well, Dave, Gaheri, why don't you step in? What are your final thoughts? Because we had a request from another rant for you, from you. So why don't you take the stage?
I don't have any rants in me right now. It's not something I can, like, you know, just create out of thin air. It has to be inside.
Of course.
So sorry about that. But yeah, I agree with Giuseppe. It's it really is an honor to be here with all of you guys. I've said that before. I have never said it to Mr. Scott because we have never been on anything before, I don't think, but it is an honor meeting you and being able to share the stage with you and getting to know that it was your grandfather who wrote that book. Of course, he is referenced quite often in that book that Giuseppe held up, Exposing the Lies of History. So, yes, I was familiar with him before, of course. Yeah, that one right there. Thank you. And we are right now sold out of the color version, but we're getting another shipment this week coming up. So if folks place an order, usually we ship immediately, many times on the same day, but we can't. So as soon as we get the shipment, we'll get it out for anybody who has placed the order and it has not gotten out today. So that's what happened. We were hit by a lot of orders. But yeah, this is really ultimately, I think, you know, we've already accomplished what has to be accomplished. It's actually there in the future, and we just have to catch up with it. I really believe that. I think that, and I don't know how that works, but I think that it's done. It just feels right. You know, Speak Free Radio feels right. And I know that Speak Free Radio will continue to expand, and it will be on that automobile, and people will be listening to it like they're listening to the Jew garbage that's coming out of their speakers right now. Speak Free Radio, even though it's cutting edge, it's not cutting edge to us, but for your average normie to be driving in their little car or big car and hearing this show or any of your other shows, that right now is not the norm, but it will be. And I'm really looking forward to it and really looking forward to doing this again whenever it comes up. And I will, I promise, I will rant.
Dave, here comes the music. Right. Take us out, Scorpio.
Okay, guys, another 3 hours down the chute. Bada bing, bada boom. Until next time, everyone take care. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.